Begin the current daf, Masechta Vayezor daf Ayin Hey. Begin on the bottom of Ayin Dal Amud Beis, four lines up from the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara continues elucidating the halacha of the previous Mishnah. The Mishnah said that regarding a wine press made out of stone, if it was covered with pitch by a non-Jew, which then they would customarily put wine in to take out the strength of that pitch, of the fumes, so they would put in wine to counter that, which is problematic because it'd be ayin nesach. So the Mishnah said a way to purify that wine press to be used by the Jew is menag vaveitayr, is to dry it up and thus to remove the elements of the ayin nesach, and then it would be pure, then it could be used by a Jew. That our Gemara explains and says, b'ma menagvan, how does one go ahead and doing this drying process to remove the element of the wine that was put in by the non-Jew when they put in the pitch into the wine press? So Rav Amar b'mayim, he says, by washing it with water. Rav Amar b'chanam, he says, be'efer with ashes. And that the Gemara asks on both of their interpretations. Rav Amar b'mayim, he says, with water b'mayim v'loy be'efer, with water and not with ashes? How is that called drying? What type of a cleansing process is that just by washing? And Rabbi Bochan Amar Be'efer, says with ashes. And that says the Gemara Be'efer B'lay B'mayim, with ashes, not with water. Ella rather says the Gemara to continue to B'mayim Heimad Olive, that Rav Amar B'mayim, Rav says you do it with water, that's the first step. V'hu Adin La'efer, and the truth is the same thing applies, that afterwards you have to put on ashes on it. And so the Rabbi Bochan Amar La'efer, he says that yes, first you put on ashes, V'hu Adin La'mayim, but the same thing would apply, that then you have to put on water after that. And actually says the Gemara, V'lay Pligi, they're not even disagreeing. Ha, B'rita Tifta. Rabbi Chana was talking about a case when it was moist, when there was some wine moisture there. Then in the cleansing process, you first put in ashes to scrub it until it's dry, and then you put in the water. Ha, B'yabeshta, Rab was talking about when it was dry, so it's dry, so then you first put in the water, and then you put in the ashes, and then you scrub it, and then it gets clean. So therefore, they're not disagreeing, it needs both the ashes and the water, depending if it's moist or dry, which one do you put in first? Those were the cases they were talking about. Now, continuing on this halacha idma, we learned that Be'rav Mishmei de'Rav Amri, the yeshiva of Rav said in the name of Rav, the tarti tlas, sometimes you need two steps, sometimes three steps. Meaning when it's a moist, when there's moisture there, then you need two steps. First, like we said, ashes to dry it up, to scrape it, and then water. Now, when it's dry, you actually need three steps. First, water to make it liquidy, and then ashes to scrub, and then water to clean that off. Now, Shmuel Amar Tlas Dalad, he says that sometimes it's either three or four steps. Three when it's moist, because first the ashes, then the water, then the ashes. Now, although there's really a fourth step, where then there's the water subsequently put on to remove the ashes, that water is not counted because that's not for the purposes and utility of the drawing of the cleansing process, that's just to clean it off from the ashes that were put in. Now, sometimes there's four steps, which is when it's dry. First you put in water, then ashes, and again that fifth step, the water, is not counted. Now, Rav only requires to put in ashes only one time. Shmuel requires two times, whether if it's moist or it's dry. That's the reason for the discrepancy of their opinions. Now, says the Gemara, B'sura Masnu Hachi. The version that we taught before was taught that way in Surah. But in Pumpadisa Masnu and Pumpadisa, they taught a different version. Be'rav Amri Mishmei de'Rav, the Yeshiva Rav said in the name of Rav, the Tlas Dalet. Sometimes it's three or four, the way we just explained the previous version, Shmuel's opinion. Shmuel, I'm in this version, Shmuel says, Dalad Hey. Sometimes it's four or five. When it's moist, it's four steps. When it's dry, it's five steps because, as the Gemara is going to explain, it's talking about that it's counting also the last waters, which the Gemara says, V'lay Pligi, that these two versions of Surah and Pumbedisa are not disagreeing. Rather, Marka Chashav Maya Basrai, that in one version they're counting the last waters. Umar Leka Chashav Maya Basrai, and one is not counting the last waters, and that is in Surah. They don't count that as a step. And therefore, they have one less. And for Medisa, they are counting on, and therefore, they add on to both opinions one more step. Continuing on these halachas, regarding kashering the wine press and its different elements from the Yayin Nesach, so they ask from Bevo, Hani Gurgi de Armoy, this lattice work, these akolim, which two different interpretations, either it means these nettings that were used to surround the pile of the grapes so that the grapes shouldn't disperse from the weight of the beam banging down and pressing out the grapes. So to hold it together, it would be in this lattice work. Or Rav Hai explains, is talking about, well, we mean our column over here is similar to what the Gemara elsewhere says of Ikol Beis Chabad, which is made like a box. but it's the pax is made out of netting like a trap, like a net to catch fish. And after they squeeze out the olives, they put that pile inside this box, and then they put a heavy beam on it to weigh it down, which is to squeeze out the rest of the liquid, the moisture that's inside of it. But they're very similar in this regard, that there's a type of a netting relating to a press, whether olive press or wine press, of a non-Jew, of an Aramean. My, what's the halacha? How does one do the niguv process of kashering that netting from the yayin nesach that's inside of it? Amalei Ravo responded to them, Tinisua, we learned it in the Braisa, talks about this case explicitly. If someone's wine press and olive press were tamei, and he wants to make it tar, not regards to prohibited food items, but rather in tuma and tahara. It became tamei, let's say, ama aretz touched it. He wants to make it tar, but it has that tamei liquid inside of it, so you have to get out those absorptions. So hadafin, the boards, which are made like a door, and they're put on top of the pile of the olives or the grapes, and vahadashin, this is the press itself where you put the grapes inside of it, vahalulavin, which literally are the palm fronds, but these are the brooms that they would use made out of the palm fronds, out of the lulav, which they would sweep all the grapes that disperse together it all together. So these elements madichin, since they don't sit there, the juice don't sit there, all you have to do is wash it with water, which Rashi says based on this you could rely that there's no necessity, as we said in our Mishnah, of ashes for the olive, for the wine press, from the fact that Ravo is bringing from this Braisa, and the Gemara is not saying that zu in the Mishnah, where that it's enough for the wine press, we're just washing it out. In contrast to our Mishnah, which said you need niguv, obviously that the later Rabban held that this is the halacha like this Braisa, that all you need to do is wash it off. Now continues the Braisa, which is what he's coming to answer them, va'kolin, and these nettings, shel nitzarn, if they're made out of wicker, or b'shel batzputz, which is made out of canvas, hemp, which they are very absorbent, so they require, and this is answering the question, minagvan, to do this niguv with ashes and water. Now, b'shel shif, b'shel gemi, but if these nettings are made out of a certain type of a plant, of a rush, which are called either shifa or gemi, which they're very absorbent, then miyashn yud b'shchedish, then you have to let it get sit there to get aged for 12 months, and then that will then remove that liquid, which is tamei, inside these nettings. Now, Shimon Lila, he says, you have to leave it from one pressing, from the olive pressing to the next olive pressing, from the wine pressing to the next wine pressing, which the Gemara asks, I know Tanakama, it's the same thing, it was done once a year. So it's 12 months, same as the Tanakama. And that says the Gemara, the difference between them is, from one wine press to the next press, sometimes it's going to be more than 12 months when the next harvest is late. And sometimes it's going to be less when it's early, so that's the difference. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is only going to require to the next wine press, whereas the Tanakhama says always 12 months. Continues the Bryce, Rabbi Yisim, he says, whoever wants to purify these things right away, not to have to wait 12 months or for the process of drying it out. So then, Megilim Bereischen, he could heat up in hot water, or he could scald it, similar process, in the olive water. The reason why it picks mezesim is because it was customarily to cook the olives that they should be soft to be able to easily get out the oil from it. So that's a quick way to get out those forbidden tummy liquids inside these elements. He says, what you could do is manichin tachas sinur shemeim of mekachin. You could put it beneath a gutter, a pipe, that the water is dripping. Oy b'mayin shemeim of redufin, or in a spring that the water is flowing. And vikama, and how long do you have to leave it over there to be able to get out those liquids? It's aina. It's a time period, which the Gemara is going to explain shortly what is that. But the Braisa first concludes, kederech sh'amr b'yayin nesach, just like we said this law regarding getting rid of the absorptions of the yayin nesach, kach amr b'tara, so too we said this law regarding the laws of tairis to get out the tummy liquids. On that is the Gemara klapilai, which way are you going? B'tara's came in. To the contrary, we were talking about tairis. Ella rather explains the Gemara, it should be read the other way. Kederech sh'amr b'tara, just like we said these halachas regarding tairis, which primary we had introduced it like Rebavo was for the halacha that they had asked him regarding this gurgi, which is the lattice work, which is these nettings, which we said depending what it's made out of, how do you purify it? But that's what's saying, just like that law is regarding tairis, kach amr b'yayin nesach, so too is the law regarding yayin nesach would be the same thing here regarding the non-Jews halacha. We're comparing it from the laws of tairis, so too that's what Rebavo is saying would be the law regarding yayin nesach and that is, it'd be the same process, whether it means niguv or if it's made out of other things, to have it for a period of 12 months. Now the Gemara clarifies, kama oinot, how long is this period? With one of the options was said that you could have it beneath a spring or a gutter for a period of an oinah. How long is that? So Amar B'chiya Barabba, Amar B'yichin, he says, oyoyim oylaila, either a daytime or a nighttime, one of those periods. Reb Chana She'ina, Vamerlan, some say it was Reb Chana Bar She'ina, Amar Rabba B'chana Amar B'yichinan, chatzi yoyim chatzi laila, half of the day and half of the night. Now Amar B'shmul B'yitzchak says, well, they're not disagreeing. Habit Kufis Nisan V'tishrei. When did we say that it's either day or night? Was by the equinoxes, when it's by Nisan or Tishrei, when the day and the night are equal. Day starts at 6 and ends at 6. So that's going to be a 12-hour period. So you could have either day or night. Habit Kufis Thomas Vatavis, the other interpretation was saying either in the summer or in the winter, where the night and days are not the same. So either, for example, you could have 7 and 5 of either the night or day, they're different time periods. So then you need to have half of the day and half the night, because both interpretations require 12 hours. So if you're in the time when it's today's 12 hours, the night is 12 hours, so then it's either day or night. But if you're at a time when it's going to be 7 hours of night and 5 hours a day, or 5 hours a day and 7 hours a night, so then you'll cut each one in half, and then you'll get a 12 hours to make that, to clear that disparity between the two of them. But again, they're both saying the same thing. It requires 12 hours. Question is, what time period you are, if you're going to say it's half a day and half a night, or just a day or a night. Continuing on these halachas, Amar Yehudi says, Hani Ravaki, these strainers, which they would make like a sackcloth, which they would put in the sediments to get out the wine that's remaining over there, the aramoi of a non-Jew, Demazia, if these sacks, these strainers are made out of the hair of a person, which are not absorbent so much, so Madichan, all you have to do is wash it out. The Amr, but if made out of wool, then it's more absorbent. The Menag, but then you have to do this Niguv process, which is cleaning it with ashes and water. The Kisna, if it's made out of linen, which absorbs even more than wool, the Meyashlan, you have to age it, like we said, for 12 months. It's got a, there's different periods of time for cleansing these things out, depending how absorbent they are. Now, v'ikakatri, if they're knotted, then sharilu, first you have to go ahead and untie those knots and then do this cleansing process. Hani de kuli, regarding these baskets, v'chalosa, and these strainers that are in the form and the shape of a beehive, which they would use to sift the wine, darmoi, if it's from a non-Jew, which again we're concerned with the liquids that absorb there, which are yayin esach, so if the chayti b'chavli de tsuri, if they're sown with these fibers of from the threads that are made from fibers of the palm of a palm tree, then madichan, then again it's not so absorbent, then you can just wash it off. Now, but if we continue to talk about bays, the tzavsa, but if it's made out of a certain type of gemi plant, then lakvan, they have to do this nigav process. The kisna, which is even more absorbent if it's made out of linen, the mayashan, you have to let it age. Again, those are the different stages about how absorbent it is, how long the process of cleaning it out requires. And if it's knots, then shariluhu, then you have to first untie the knots, and then you do this nigu process, because again, the wine gets absorbed into those knots, and if you want them to be able to get it out, you have to first untie them. Itmar was said that ama oret shahishid yode legas, an ignoramus who sticks his hand into the wine press, v'noga be'ishkailos, and he touches the grape clusters that are sitting in wine. So there's a machlekes Rebbe v'Rebchia. Chadam eshko v'chol s'bivoyse v'tmein. One says that the cluster of grapes that he touched and those around it which are touching that clusters, they become tamei. But v'chol agas kulub tar. But the rest of the wine press is going to be tar, because he's an av. He touches the cluster which is a rishon. The second one becomes a shein. But then chulin cannot continue in the laws of tumah further than that. But v'chadam, the other opinion says no. Kol agas kulub nami tmei. No, the entire wine press is going to be tamei because of the liquid that's inside of that, which goes and transmits it to the entire wine press over there. Now the Gemara actually asks, according to the opinion who says that it's only the cluster that he touches, and those which touch the cluster around this cluster are tummy, but the rest of the wine press is tar, why is it different from Mishnah Masechtas Taharos that says, regarding vermin that are found in the grinder, which they would grind the olives before they would put them into the bat, into the olive press. And then, once it was ground down, then they would put it into the olive press, and then they would put a beam on it to squeeze out the oil. So if you find vermin over there, you find the sherets, which transmits tumah, dead sherets, it only transmits tumah to where it touched. but the rest of the olives there are not tummy. But if there was liquid going throughout that grinder, so then hakol tummy, everything's tummy because the liquid is one big liquid and it's touching, it makes everything else into a rishon, it touches everything and therefore makes everything tummy. So why is it different than this than the wine press? We also have the wine that's sitting over there that should transmit tummy to all the clusters. Why are only the clusters around the one that the amar has touched tummy and the rest of the gas is going to be tar? So the Gemara hasam lemipsik v'lemidi, there by the grinder with the olive and the sherets, there the liquid's going to combine them all because in olives there's no clusters. And therefore, there's nothing that's interposing. So the liquid's going to transmit the tumah to every olive that's there in the grinder. But hacha mifsiki ashkelis, here the other clusters that are there are interposing, does not allow the liquid to easily transfer from one thing to the next. And therefore, each cluster is going to be considered independent. And therefore, it's only going to be the cluster that he touched with the one that are touching those that are going to be tummy, but the rest of the gas is going to be tar. And the Gemara concludes, earlier Rabban Lubirmiya. The Rabbanah taught to Rabbi Yirmiyah, Ramalan, some say it was the Labrej Rabbi Yirmiyah, to the son of Rabbi Yirmiyah, Kedirah Ha'imah, like the opinion of whichever one it is, either Rabbi B'chi that said, Eshko v'chol sevi v'vayse of Tameim, it's only the cluster that Amar has touched, and the ones that are surrounding that cluster that are Tameim. But v'chol ha'gaz, kulu tar, but the rest of the wine press is going to be Tahar, again, because like we said, there, the clusters are considered independent and do not allow the liquid to go ahead and come in contact with every one of them like it is by the olives, in contrast to the clusters, and therefore they're all going to be tar. Besides the one that he touched and the one that's near it. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah. We're continuing on the halachas of being machshir kalim, where we had been speaking about specifically that of yayin nesach. Now we continue in general regarding purifying vessels from impurities or non-kosher elements that are inside of it. Says the Mishnah, Alekech kli tashmish min ha'evdikecham. Someone buys a vessel of utility from a non-Jew. So, esh adark lahatful, that which is normally immersed, in other words, that it's fit to purify it by immersion in the mikveh, so yatful. So you don't have to do any other rectification. All you have to do is, if let's say it's a type of vessel that is used with cold, like a drink, then you just immerse it in the mikveh, and then you don't need to do anything else, then the Jew can use it. Lahagel, let's say those which are to have to be boiled in hot water, for example, a vessel that's usually used in that form, for example, pots and different types of cooking elements. So then yagel, so then it has to be purified by boiling in hot water, which the Gemara is going to explain that Yosha actually require in these vessels that are bought from a non-Jew, also tefillah, immersion in the mikvah. The labim b'or, let's say types of vessels which, as the Gemara is going to explain, are generally heated on the fire itself, like a grill. The nilabim or then has to be purified with libun, which becomes white in the fire. Hashvud va'askala explains the Mishnah of these cases, which a spit and a grill, which are generally used by roasting. So malam or that has to be heated up in the fire directly. Hasakin, a knife. So shafa, that you scrape against the stone of the smith. V'hitayra, and that itself will already purify it because it's used with cold. You just have to scrape it out like it because it gets stuck on the knife. As that's what generally happens when using a knife and sticking into something. The Gemara brings it, we had mentioned Tano, Ulun, Abraisa, Bakulon, all these elements, even those which are purified through Hagala and Libun, which are really burning out whatever bliyas that are inside of it, there's not going to be any non-kosher elements inside, still Tshich and Tfilah Bar Mam Sa, they still need to be immersed in the mikvah when they're purchased from a non-Jew in the mikvah of 40 Sa. Which the Gemara says, Manan Mili, where do we know this from? Amarav, he says, because Damakar, the Pasuk says in Mamidbar, called Davar Ashayav Be'esh, anything which comes in the fire, meaning that's usually utilized, which was, these were vessels that were conquered from the Midianites by the Jewish people, which the Midianim had used them in the fire. So it says the Pasuk, Tavir Be'esh, you have to put it into the fire, which is the halachic dictum that the Gemara says later on, Kebailoi Kach Palta. Just however it absorbed the prohibition, so too is how it's going to emit it, which is if it absorbed it through hot water, then it gets rid of it through hot water or on the fire itself. Then says the pasuk v'tar, and then it's going to be pure, which that seems to be extra because we're saying that's how you kasher tavir beish. What's v'tar? Says Rava, heisim l'cha kasev taracheres. The pasuk is including another purification, which is besides the libun or the hagala, you also have to do immersion in the mikvah. Or another interpretation, Tani Bar Kappara, he says, Metech Shnemah, from the fact that the Pasuk says over there in the one that we just quoted, in the Klei Midyan, says, B'mei Nida Yischata, that in the Nida waters, it's going to be purified. So the word Nida means a word of Hazah, of Legyada, of to throw. From this pasuk, I would seem to understand that to purify these vessels that are born from a non-Jew, you need to spray it with the ashes of the paraduma on day 3 and day 7. On that says Bar Kappara, Tamalim Ach. That's what the pasuk teaches, however, an exclusionary term, Ach, is only, which is Chalak, is excluding. Which is saying that no, it does not require purification for a period of 7 days and spraying it with the ashes of paraduma day 3 and day 7. So M came out Tamalim of May Nidus. And what does the pasuk teach with the waters of the Nida? And that says Bar Kappara, Mayim Shenida Tevelasman. It's referring to the waters that a Nida, a menstruating woman, who's also called by the word Nida, that she immerses in that, which have Aima Baram Sa, that is 40 Sa. That's what's teaching that the vessels have to be purified by when it goes into the domain of a Jew in waters of 40 Sa. And that explains the Gemara, both interpretations. Itzuch lemichta betar, we need Rava's source of betar. Itzuch lemichta meinida, we need a Bar Kappara's source of meinida. Why? Iksev betar, had it only said betar, havimina betar koldu, I would have thought to say any purification, which is even in a mikveh that doesn't have 40 sa. Kazrachman b'meinida, that's why it says in the passing meinida, to say that no, it needs just like what a nida needs, which is 40 sa. Because Rachman may need it, had we only had Bar Kappara source of the Nida waters, Havimina Harav Shemesh Kanida. So then I would think it needs everything like the Nida, which is even sundown, like when a Nida that went to the mikvah, it's not enough that she went to the mikvah, she has to wait for sundown. Because Rachman, the Batar La Alta, that's what it says also, the first source out of Batar, to say that no, the purification comes immediate after one immerses the Kalim in the mikvah, it could already immediately be used. Now, Amr of Nachman, Amr Rabba Ravu, he says, Afilik Kalim Chadoshim B'mashma. This halacha seems to include even brand new utensils that were never used by a non-Jew. Still, one has to immerse it in the mikvah. How do we know this? Do Yeshanim V'libnon, because old vessels that then were purified with Libun by putting it hot on a burning fire, Kechadoshim Dome, are like brand new, because whatever absorptions that there were are totally disintegrated. Falachi by tefillah, and we just explained before, it still needs to have tefillah. So obviously, you see that even new vessels need to have tefillah in the mikvah. Now, Maskel Rav Sheshes on this halacha, Rav Sheshes asked, "Yihacha afila zuzu the sar b'lenami?" Then even scissors that are used to cut wool, that of the garment maker, since you tell me it's a biblical decree that one buys a vessel from a non-Jew has to be immersed in the mikvah, and not because of emissions of prohibited absorptions, because new vessels don't have any absorptions and still require tefillah, so even something like scissors should have to be immersed in the mikvah. That amalai, they said to him, klei suda amurim b'parsha. No, the pasuk talks about only utensils that are used in a meal that says kol dav ashayaveh be'esh. Anything that's used in the fire, generally the only things that are used over the fire are vessels that are used in the preparation of a meal. Regarding those vessels, it says v'tahir, which, as we said, means to be immersed in the mikvah. But these zuz of the sarbali, these scissors that are used for the cloth maker has no relevancy to the halacha of requiring tefillah. Another halacha on this Amr of Nachman, Amr Abba Ravua, says leishana elab lekuchen. This halacha was only said regarding vessels which are bought by the Jew, which are in his possession now forever. Like the incident which was the source of this in the Torah, which is in Midian, where the Jews then conquered and these became their kalim forever. But if these vessels are only being borrowed, then the Jew does not have to immerse it in the mikvah. Now, Ritzch by Yosef, Zavin Mono de Mardo. Continuing on these halachas, the Gemara tells that Ritzch by Yosef bought a vessel made out of earth and cattle dung, which are mixed together, and then they make vessels out of it. He bought Me'ovid Kechavim from a non-Jew. So, Sabalat Tfila, he thought, as the halacha by Mishnah, you buy a vessel that's used for food purposes, you have to immerse it in the mikvah. However, Amalei Ahumer Abanan, Rabbi Yaakov Shmei, one of the rabbis, and his name was Rabbi Yaakov, said to him, "Ledidim mefarshli menid Rabbi Yechanan." To me, it was explained from Rabbi Yechanan that klei matches amur meparsha. The vessels that are mentioned there in the parsha requiring immersion in the vessels of a non-Jew are metallic, are metal, like the pasuk says in Bamidbar Lamanaf, aches, azav, gomer, gold and silver. All the things that were mentioned there are only metal, but these that are made out of earthenware do not require immersion in the mikvah when it's bought from a non-Jew. Now, Amr Vashi explains that Hanikli Schuchas, these glass vessels, Hoyl Vachinishtabru Yeshlan Takana, since when they break, there's a way of fixing it to remelt it and make a new vessel out of those broken pieces. So since when they break, they can be fixed through melting. That has the same element like metal, which also could be fixed when it breaks, in contrast to, like, let's say, earthenware. And therefore, it has to be immersed in the mikvah, just like metallic, like it's mentioned in the Torah, has to be immersed in the mikvah when it's bought from a non-Jew. Now, continues the Gemara, kunya, which the primary vessel is made out of earthenware, but then it's plated with a plate of metal, glazed, which it's used with cold, and it's bought from a non-Jew. So, pligibar vachavavina. One says its halachic status is as its initial stage, which is earthenware, which does not require tefillah because it's not like metal. But one says its halachic status is like how it ends up being, which is at the end, which is it's plated with metal. So therefore it's like a metal kli, and therefore it does have to have immersion in the mikvah. And says the Gemara, v'hichas ha-kasev, the halacha is it's as its end, where since it ends up being a metal plated keli, it has to be immersed in the mikvah. And the Ibailu had the following question. We said before, it has to be something that was huchlet, it has something that was is permanently by the Jew, that is bought by him, not when it's borrowed, then it needs to be immersed in the mikvah. But let's say it's something that's not with a kashrus problem, he's just borrowing from a non-Jew, he doesn't have to tevel in the mikvah. Now, yibaylu mashkantamai, what's halacha if the non-Jew gave it to the Jew for collateral? So Amar Bar Vashi says, Abba mashkan le'ovi kachavim kasa de kaspa. My father, he had a non-Jew who gave him a silver goblet as collateral. So it's not borrowed, but it's neither permanently his. And my father went and immersed it in the mikvah and then drank from it. Now, however, he says, but I don't know. I don't know if it's because he held the collateral is like a sale, because ultimately it's like what's owed to the Jew. It's like his. It's barter for the loan that he gave him. Or maybe it was because he happened to have seen in that case by that non-Jew that his intention was to leave it by him and never to redeem it and to pay back the loan. And that's why my father said, okay, it's mine now forever and therefore I have to immerse it. But not because a regular collateral would be considered like that. And never the Gemara doesn't answer it from that case because it could be he held that it is like a sale and therefore would require in generally a mashkin tefillah. But could be not. Could be it was only in that case because he saw that this guy was not going to ever redeem it and therefore it was already like his and that's why he immersed it. But generally one would not require possibly to immerse a vessel that was given as collateral. Continuing on the elaboration on the halacha of our mission, the Gemara brings turn on in a brisa. Halakech kli tashmish min oivid kechavim. If someone buys a vessel used in the utility of meal purposes from a non-Jew, so dvarm shle nishtamish ben, so regarding elements that were not used, they were never used, so there's no problem of kashrus. So matvila main taran, all you have to do is immerse it in the mikvah and it's going to be tar, which halacha generally when you buy a vessel that's used for food purposes from a non-Jew. Let's say something that was used by the non-Jew, but it was used with cold things, kugain kaisis like cups, bikatonis and these drink dippers, betzlechis and flasks. So madichin matbilin behem tar. So you have to wash it out, but that's all you have to do, and then you immerse it in the mikvah, and then it's tar. Dvarm shenishtamish ben al dechaman regarding vessels that were used with hot water, kugain hayaris like pots, vakumkumasin and kettles, mechamichamin and things that are used to heat up hot water, which are urns. So then Magila, then like we said before, Kabbali Karpote, the way it absorbed it, which was hot water, that's you have to kasher it, which is you have to heat it up in hot water, umat bilan, and then after you kasher, then you put in the mikvah, vein tar, and then the tar. Dvarm shenishtamish ben al dei or things that were used directly on the fire, kukaina shvudin like spits, vaskalois, and grills, malabnon umat bilan vein tar. So they have to require first libun, which is to heat up on the fire itself, like with a blowtorch. Then once it's kosher, then you have to do the other element of tefillah, and then they're tar. Now, the kulin shenishtamish ben, regarding all these things that if they were used, atchalayat, before they were immersed in the mikvah, v'shalayagal, and if there was no hagalah done to them, v'shalayilaban, and that there was no liban done to them, so tanichada asa, so one says, this was a non-kosher item that bought from a non-Jew, so it's going to be forbidden. But tanidach mutter, the other one says it's going to be permitted. How do you understand that? Says, it's not a difficulty. The one that says that the food's going to be prohibited is because it's like the opinion that says that even if food gives a, if prohibited food gives a deficient taste, it's still going to prohibit the food that it goes into, so it's going to be awesome. The other one who says that, okay, if it was done inappropriately and it was not kashered first, the food's going to be kashered because it's saying like the opinion that says if it gives a deficient taste, it's going to be permitted, and here it's giving a bad taste into the food. Now that has the Gemara. According to the one who says that when the prohibited element gives a bad taste into the kosher food is going to remain permitted. So regarding the emissions of the non-Jew, with the Torah made forbidden, like it said by the clay midian in the Torah, like it says tavir be'esh v'tar, that you have to first clean it in, you have to purify it in fire, and then it's going to be pure, which you require hagalah. Seichem mishkachesla. How do you ever have that halacha if you're saying anyways what they got from midian was already tam of gam? If they would cook in it kosher food, it would give a bad taste. It's anyways going to be mutter. So where did the Torah ever require the halachas of hagalah and libun? He says, the Torah was only prohibiting over there. El Kedera, only a pot, as a type of Ein Vamanaf, that the non-Jews of Midian had cooked in it that same day. And then 3 hours later, the Jew wants to cook his food after they conquered Midian. The Lav Nason Tamil of Gamahu, that's not going to give a deficient taste. But if, yeah, if it was cooked the previous day by the Midianites, and then it already got deficient by being stayed overnight, then if the Jew would cook in it the following day, it would then spit out into another cooked dish, they would only give a deficient taste. Yeah, then the food would be permitted. The Torah said it's forbidden to require Hagala and Libun if it was being cooked on that same day. Now that has the Gemara, so Mekamba Elich Lishtri. So then after overnight or a 24-hour period, then actually it should be permitted to you. So why do we ever require Hagala and Libun would buy from a non-Jew, even when he was used with non-kosher, but it's nice and time lof kam, it should be mutter. So the Gemara, even according to that opinion, gizeira kedera she'ina basyema, it's a rabbinic decree because of a vessel, that you're right, even though it should be okay because it's not that, wasn't used that same day, mishum kedera basyema might come to be confused with something that was used that same day, which would be the biblical violation of having non-kosher, because those emissions would be tam l'shvach, would be giving a good taste, and therefore we said it's always prohibited unless we first do hagal or liban, but yeah, if it was used after the fact, then we're saying it's going to be permitted if, as long as it wasn't used in that same day. But Ve'idach, the other opinion who says that Nisan Tam Lof Gam is Aser, holds that Kedera Basyem and Namim Mifkin Pagama. It says that even if you're going to say that the biblical source of the clay midian was used that same day, and that was where the Torah was saying it's forbidden, unless you do Hagol or Liban, says that no, even there you'll see Tam Lof Gam is Aser. So therefore it's going to be Aser even if it's a day or two later, because if it was used 3 hours earlier, it already is deficient. And they already give some bad taste, and still the Torah you're saying says it's usr, and therefore you see the halacha that they say that Nisan Tam Lof Gam is going to be usr, and therefore if you use these vessels without kashering, without hagala, liban, whatever the type of requirement that required, and it's going to be used, therefore this opinion held that it's going to be usr, because they say, as we just explained from the biblical source, that Nisan Tam Lof Gam gives a deficient taste, still it's usr because the non-kosher items are mixed into the kosher food.